Welcome everyone to the Maiden Voyage, the pilot episode of the latest and greatest addition to the North-South Connection. We are Tim and Marcus. Welcome to the viewer's choice. Marcus, how are you?
Doing great, man. Thank you everybody for tuning in to our pilot episode. Excited to get this kicked off. Excited to join the North-South Connection family of networks and podcasts. And I'm just pumped to do this.
As am I. I mean, I'm very excited for the opportunity that JT and the crew threw our way, and we hope not to let them down.
Is mentioning JT like mentioning Vince during a Hall of Fame segment? Like,
it might be. Let us know in the show notes or the comments for the podcast. You were already fired. We don't know. It's kind of like calling a title a belt or referring to the boys in the back.
Ric Flair.
Yes. So before we get into what we'll be doing here, we wanted to take a little bit of time and kind of introduce ourselves to you all. We're just two new voices on a podcast network that you guys have come to know and love. And we want to kind of break the ice a little bit as to who we are, why we know each other, why we fit together, and what we're going to be doing every so often here on the North-South Connection in the way of viewer's choice. So, Marcus, how long has it been since we've been best friends, close partners, working associates?
We have been best friends dating back to the week that Sting joined the Wolfpack.
Sting!
Yes. It's Sting!
We've been best friends almost longer than people are married.
Yes, more and more. Every year, more married people drop, and our number keeps going up.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop. It's not going to stop. If you want to picture us, we're like Rob and Big. If Rob was short, fat, and Big was just a little skinnier.
A little bit thinner.
A little bit thinner. He's still thick, but he's a little thin.
Let's talk about our background a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
You know, let's throw out some qualifications here. We are two people who have been in the professional wrestling business. I know Tim won't brag, but Tim has done commentary across independent wrestling, most notably at Excellence Professional Wrestling. He's also done some spots for – did you do Lancaster Championship Wrestling?
No, I've done Pro Wrestling Empire, and I'm actually just agreed upon being the new commentator for Atomic Championship Wrestling as well.
Look at that guy. Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Things worked out, and things have fallen into my lap, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to run with it.
Look at the power this podcast is already pushing us through.
And Marcus, on the other hand, Marcus is a classically trained professional wrestler that you may have seen, you may not have seen. Yes. But he's trained under the likes of Charles Taylor, Claudio Castagnana, you know him as Cesaro, Sarah Del Rey, and many others. At a school that no longer exists. So he's traveled all across the United States, internationally a little bit in Canada. So he's seen the ins and outs on the inside of the ring, and I've seen the ins and outs on the outside of the ring. And we feel as though what we've noticed, at least with like some people that are in the business of professional wrestling or sports entertainment, that they lose their fandom, their passion as to why they wanted to get involved in that wacky, crazy world. And what's great about Marcus and I is not only did we not lose that childlike enthusiasm, it's actually kind of been bolstered. We know a way to watch something critically, but also as a fan still, and not be so cynical like other people might be when they're in the trenches of wrestling. Is that fair to say, Marcus?
It's very fair to say. We both watch wrestling through a lens of, I would say, positivity, but enjoyment. And, you know, if we enjoy something, we enjoy it and we magnify it and we praise it. And if we don't like something, we don't necessarily harp on it, because chances are, this time next week, there's going to be another 3 hours of TV, and whatever we don't like is probably going to be off to the wayside. It's a business that constantly keeps moving, and we're not going to get hung up on things that we disliked. However, for the format of the show,
we are.
We are. We are. We are going to put on are happy and sad, are praise and dismay.
The tragedy and comedy masks.
That's the one.
But the Viewer's Choice podcast is going to be a fun take on a pay-per-view review recap style podcast. They're going to come out the Monday after every WWE, NXT, and AEW pay-per-view. It'll be available for you right into where. So if you've already subscribed to the North-South Connection, you have no place else to go. Just give a chance to the Viewer's Choice podcast and give it a listen. We promise we're not going to tell you everything that you've already just seen. But here's where we're going to be different. Picture daytime TV courtroom shows. The small claims court, your Judge Judy's, your Judge Joe Brown's, your people's courts. There's always a plaintiff and there's always a defendant. And that's the two sides we're going to take for every pay-per-view from a major promotion in the year of our Lord, 2021. One of us will be the plaintiff who is going to try to convince you, the listening audience, that the pay-per-view that you just watched was the absolute worst thing you've ever seen in your life. Or the defendant is going to try to protect the good name of whatever you just spent 50 some odd bucks on BR Live for. Just to give you an idea, that's how it's going to break down. And it's going to change. One of us will be on the negative side of the ball, and the next pay-per-view will be on the positive side of the ball. And it really all boils down to you, the viewer. Hence the name Viewer's Choice. Just like LeVar Burton in Reading Rainbow, don't take our word for it. Go back, watch the pay-per-views we talked about. Hopefully you're just as excited as we are in the things. But we feel as though playing both sides of the field this sort of way will cover almost all of your feelings on a pay-per-view, and actually seeing them all laid out is going to be a way for you to really, to actually kind of look and see. Sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. Right.
But there definitely will be an element of instant reaction, because the podcast does come out, you know, the day following, the morning following a pay-per-view. And so there is no TV done by that time that we've seen. So we don't necessarily know where things are going. So we're going to have to judge them as they stand.
Right. So it's going to always be up to you all, the listening audience, to be our judge, our jury, and our executioner for where a pay-per-view actually stands. And you can always let us know your thoughts and your feelings on the pay-per-views as they go along at VC on North South on Twitter. And you can follow us for any pay-per-view that we cover, starting with the Royal Rumble, moving through TakeOver and Revolution and two nights of WrestleMania that we'll squeeze into one podcast, and on throughout until we get to December's TLC pay-per-view, if TLC is the last pay-per-view in 2021. I'm not sure.
Remember that one time they did it in October? It was like, why?
They changed everything. Like, the WWE schedule for pay-per-view is very weird, but we know at least AEW, you've got Revolution, you've got Double or Nothing, you've got All Out, and then what is their other one? Full Gear. And so we'll at least stick to those, and of course, TakeOvers as they go along. NXT proper, WWE, and AEW pay-per-views here, North-South Connection, Viewer's Choice. So we decided to give you all a dry run, a look at the podcast before we break it down for the Royal Rumble 2021. So we went back into the Wayback Machine, and Marcus has been talking about a pay-per-view on Twitter that absolutely needed a rewatch. And so we, for this pilot episode, are going to attack and defend Royal Rumble 1994.
And how?
As a reminder of what happened at the Royal Rumble 1994, you had Bam Bam Bigelow versus Tatanka. You had the Hart brothers, Brett and Owen, taking on the Quebecers for the WWF Tag Team Championships. You have Razor Ramon defending the Intercontinental Championship against IRS. You have the mighty Yokozuna taking on The Undertaker in a casket match. And you have the 30-man over-the-top rope Battle Royale. Am I missing something?
No, that's it.
I feel like there's another match, but I...
That's it. Nope.
That's... Okay.
That's it.
I actually remembered and I didn't read notes this time.
Nicely done.
Proof that I watched it.
Nicely done.
Yes. So, for this episode, I, Tim, will be on the positive side of the Royal Rumble. And Marcus will play the negative Nancy, the Debbie Downer of the group, shining a black light in the house known as Royal Rumble 94, looking for all the bloodstains to see where any murders might have happened. So, as the plaintiff, would you like to go first, or would you like to defer?
I will defer.
Okay.
I will defer.
So, I'm not going to go in order from top to bottom. I'm going to try to make the best case possible to make the Royal Rumble 1994 stand out as being a great event.
A little bit of framing.
A little bit of framing,
Your Honor.
I'm telling a story. I'm building the house brick by brick, and I'm starting with the strongest foundation. And the strong foundation is the birth of the diesel push.
Mm.
You know, the Royal Rumble, well, at first, the first couple of Rumbles, the trope was the Iron Man. Who's going to go 40 minutes, 50 minutes, 52 minutes? This year, we said no to distance, but we're going to have a dude dominate the ring for nearly the first half of the Royal Rumble. Diesel comes in as a newly acquired asset. He had been around for some time, but this was his coming out party. This was Diesel cementing himself as a fixture in the WWF until his departure from the company. You can look back to Royal Rumble 94, his performance eliminating seven individuals, the tease between him and Shawn Michaels, and the applause that Diesel got leaving the Royal Rumble after being a person who was a part of the Alliance to End the Dark Side just a segment before and burying The Undertaker in a casket. Going from being one of in a group that is one of the most hated people to then getting the honor and respect of the Providence Civic Center and then the rest of what's now known as the WWE Universe. The Diesel push is probably the greatest gift that Royal Rumble 94 has given every Royal Rumble since.
Oh, man.
I'm not coming at you with kid gloves. Like, this... Final wrestling places are jokey, jokey, laughy, laughy, haha. Like, this is... When I'm defending, I'm defending. Rumble
94.
You know
how to tug at my heartstrings.
Exactly.
You know how to attack the weaknesses when you bring in Kevin Nash.
You know, the gatekeeper of the good place.
You know, you're not going to get any arguments from me. I cannot even begin to build a case against the Diesel push, how effective it was. However, while we're talking about the Royal Rumble match, it's a Royal Rumble match that didn't have all 30 participants.
Right.
That needs to be a huge strike against the match.
We can't help that Bastion Booger had toilet problems.
I think you can make an argument that to this point, the field is the weakest that it had ever been. So is
Wait
Diesel
till next
seven,
year.
Is Diesel's seven eliminations that impressive when he got the likes of Virgil and washed up Bob Backlund in there?
Did you see how hard Virgil hit Diesel?
See how hard Diesel hit Virgil?
Oh, yeah. Well, he also threw out a Steiner brother. He threw out Quang, Owen Hart.
Bart Gunn,
Billy Gunn.
I mean, these are not high power, diesel powered eliminations. However.
But also, he can't control that. Like, he can only eliminate those that come into the ring.
I don't disagree. Like I said, it's hard to poke holes at the Diesel case, the Diesel push. It was tremendous. It's one of the best things that the Royal Rumble has ever done. However, one of the worst things that was ever done was The Undertaker being put into a casket.
Uh-huh.
Having the entire heel locker room, not a single babyface come out to help avenge The Undertaker. You got Paul Bearer going out there taking bumps. You got the urn leaking green stuff.
Yep. I haven't heard a bad part yet.
Oh, it's all bad. It's all terrible.
So the dark side, the cloud of the dark side, having an actual color and a visage is bad.
Yeah, because Paul we Bear, know earlier
Paul Bear Hulk fighting, Hulk, Paul Bear fighting to the death to defend the urn. Fighting
we know
off
earlier the, that Hulk Hogan had opened up the urn and threw the ashes in Undertaker's eyes to win the WWE title for a what is that, fifth time back then? Fourth time.
No one counts that. Look, when he won the title, the title ended up going into abeyance, and then Ric Flair won it in a Royal Rumble.
All right. So besides them trying to retcon that the urn had never been opened before, we do have the first major disappearance of the Undertaker. Or is that Marty Jannetty?
Well, you wouldn't have known it was Marty Jannetty.
I knew it was Marty Jannetty then.
No, you forever. Did not.
You absolutely did. Rock, rock, rock until you drop, Marty Jannetty.
I will not rest in peace.
Yeah. Not impressed. Never impressed. Like, it's Yokozuna, the most physically dominant force that had ever, you know, graced the WWF. And you mean to tell me he needs the help of the entire heel locker room? It's not enough that you got Tenru. It's not enough that you got Kabuki. You gotta get Diesel. You need Jeff Jarrett. Did you really need the power of Jeff Jarrett out there?
I wrote down the names of everyone that was involved in the alliance to end the dark side.
Let's play a little list it. So I know you got the head shrinkers out there.
So you had Crush.
You got Crush, brother.
Kabuki. Tenru.
Uh-huh.
The Bammer, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Bomb.
Bomb Squad.
Samu and Fatu, the head shrinkers. Jeff Jarrett and Diesel. With Mr. Fuji and Jim Cornette. Not even including the Yokozuna.
Overkill. And it wasn't even that effective, in my opinion. It would have been. I'm not here to rebook it. I'm here to judge it as it stands. I thought it was poor. It was a poor decision to bring out the entire heel locker room. Nobody to come to the defense of the Undertaker. I just didn't think it was very good.
But who was the Undertaker's allies in the WWF at that time?
Well, back at Survivor Series, you just teamed with the Steiner brothers.
Who were getting ready for the Royal Rumble.
So is everybody else you just listed.
Yeah. But as the bad guys, they had the chance to perpetrate a plot. I'm not thinking that Paul Bearer and The Undertaker are like, you know what? We're going to get jumped by 12 dudes. We need to have a backup plan. So let me call up the Steiner brothers and Tatanka and Lex Luger and Sparky Plug and everybody else in the Royal Rumble for that point. Like, Yokozuna, Jim Cornette, and Mr. Fuji had a plan, and they executed their plan to perfection. While Yokozuna was a dominating presence, his Achilles heel is the fear of the casket.
Original, even at that point.
Okay, I'm sorry that Kamala did it first. Okay? I'm sorry. But Yokozuna, afraid of the casket. It makes perfect sense for Mr. Fuji to send out all the king's horses and all the king's men to try to put the Undertaker down. Now, I'm not excusing the GoPro, the quote unquote GoPro in the casket, mm-hmm. even though it's not, because how you have that wide of a shot on a casket when the lid's closed and there's no door on it. Like,
guess that's more power of the dark side, huh? Defying physics.
Come on, fam. That was weird. But, The gang of dudes beating up the Undertaker, I'm fine with.
I think it's the literal definition of overbooked, and I'm not here for it. Another thing that I am not here for is an IRS match on pay-per-view.
Oh, come on, man.
How long did he have Razor Ramon in a chin lock or an abdominal stretch? And I love a good wear down maneuver. But you got IRS come on, man. IRS on pay-per-view. No, thank you.
I mean, I'm going to just be real with you. I ain't got nothing for the Intercontinental title match in my notes for good stuff. I don't. I'll be honest with you. I watched it. I couldn't even tell you anything that happened other than Razor Ramon won with the career ender. No, Sean, it was convoluted at best.
Oh, overbooked. Again.
Yeah, double belt shot Joneses.
Yeah, another overbooked mess. So we're 2 for 2 on overbooking. Mind you, we also have a tie for the first time ever to win the finish the Royal Rumble.
Hey.
So that's 3 overbooked finishes on this show, hey. And he got 5 matches. And then let's go some more overbooking. How about the tag team title match the tag team title match doesn't even end cleanly because you got
Earl Hebner. Because Bret Hart can't get out of his own way, and he couldn't have just tagged Owen.
Don't make me.
He just couldn't. Nah, I got to get this sharpshooter on even though my leg's dead.
He's trying to win the match.
He could have tagged his perfectly healthy partner.
What's Owen Hart going to do?
Put the sharpshooter on him. The same thing Bret's going to do, except he's got two legs and Bret's got one. Bret's selfish.
It's a fourth overbooked, convoluted finish of the evening. I'm not here for it. Can I just get like a good clean finish besides the opener? No, you can't on this show. The limit does not exist.
You're not going to sit here and you're not going to blaspheme. You're not going to sit here and try to defend or not defend, but it's Bret's fault that they lost. And that's why
he never had a problem tagging Anvil.
Yeah, he didn't have a problem tagging. Why did he have a problem tagging Owen? His pride.
Because Owen's on his Anvil.
Because Jim's a Neidhart and not a real heart.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
No, the tag title match is hard to nitpick. It is though. You know, in line of the night, it is the first of many overbooked finishes of the night. We want overbooked, convoluted, not clean. And when you're buying a pay-per-view, I expect pay-per-view finishes. And on this night, again, aside from the opener, which is bare minimum of what you can give me as far as clean finishes, I didn't get a clean finish all night.
But anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation. And that's what happened in the finish of the Royal Rumble. I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. Jack Tunney is not afraid to make history. It's a gut check decision. Both men had been attacked violently during the night. I'm sorry that he didn't slide into the ring and blow out both of his quads to resolve this one. He left that for the commentator on the night. But having two winners leads for more questions than answers leading into the Royal Rumble. Because you have to think, this is only the second Royal Rumble in history in which the winner of the Royal Rumble gets the right to face the WWF champion at WrestleMania. We established it in 93 with Yokozuna, and now we get to 94 and we have two winners. So what does that mean? How is that going to work cleanly? And it definitely drives towards the episodic level of television that now WWE has come to know and love recently.
Right. So basically, if I had bought this pay-per-view, there is no need for it other than to see Bam Bam Bigelow lose to Tatanka, which wasn't even the scheduled match. It was supposed to be Ludwig Borga, and he didn't even show up for his match. He's injured or whatever. So I've got the first match isn't even the match that is advertised. The revenge of Tatanka, getting his win back from Ludwig Borga, who had broken the undefeated streak of Tatanka. So I don't get that payoff. I don't get a clean finish of the tag team title match. I've got an IRS match on pay-per-view, and it's not even a clean finish. I got Shawn Michaels running in with the bogus Intercontinental title.
Returning and having the bogus Intercontinental title claim because he was the unbeaten Intercontinental champion.
Yeah.
Razor wins it in a battle royal on Raw, or wins it after beating Rick Martel after being the last two men in a battle royal on Raw.
Then I've got the entire heel locker room coming down to sit on the Undertaker's coffin and trap him in there with the GoPro camera.
Well, if Yokozuna could have got the job done and he could have gotten past looking at the casket, he wouldn't have had to call Humpty Dumpty's men.
Is he going to squash that casket? And then I've got two winners. I don't even have two winners necessarily. I've got a tie for the Royal Rumble match.
You have two winners. Two winners.
Two winners is a tie. It was a tie for the Royal Rumble match. Not exactly what I would pay my hard-earned money to see. I would not be pleased with any of those results live and in real time. When I could just turn on Monday Night Raw for free the next night and get all the results, I didn't miss a single thing. There was nothing that was must-see, and everything was going to play out the next night on TV. Why would I ever buy the pay-per-view?
I mean, you could say the same thing for any other pay-per-view ever in the history of ever.
I'm talking about this one specifically. Well, like there was not a satisfying finish.
So basically, this podcast is going to be exactly what you're saying it is. That none of the pay-per-views we're going to cover is going to be worth watching because you could just listen to viewer's choice and be told exactly what happened, and it's not worth watching.
Possibly. Maybe that's what we're doing. Maybe
that's
we're
horrible. That's a horrible line of thinking, argument, counselor.
My argument is that you buy the pay-per-view, you don't get a single fulfilling finish all night. There's not a clean finish. There is nothing definitive. And then why did you buy the pay-per-view?
Because it's all leading to the place of divinity in the WrestleMania. Anything that happens in the Royal Rumble leads to WrestleMania. When Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior stare down at 90.
Right, but I didn't have a Hogan Warrior tie to close out the Royal Rumble, and I didn't have Brutus Beefcake and the Genius having the heel locker room run down to have all the heels beat up Brutus Beefcake and cut his hair or anything like that. So, like, there's a difference between the 90 Royal Rumble, the 94 Royal Rumble. Like, this event by itself, it's got bad finishes. And I don't know if they're necessarily bad, but they're not clean. And it's not pay-per-view. They're not pay-per-view worthy finishes. And okay, you can have different finishes, but do you need to do them one after the other, after the other, after the other, when you only have five matches on a card?
When you're building towards WrestleMania, yeah.
Ah, boy.
Because you have to think, Shawn Michaels appearing directly leads to the WrestleMania match. The double elimination to end the Royal Rumble leads to the story they're telling. Because you have to continue with the Owen Hart story because you set that up at the Royal Rumble. You can't just bypass that and go through with it. This is Lex Luger's last chance at the WWF Championship. The Undertaker, he's leaving. You don't know how long he's going to be gone for.
Forever, hopefully.
Forever, until SummerSlam. I think it's a perfect vehicle to draw people through the Royal Rumble and towards WrestleMania.
A lot happened, but nothing happened.
Correct. I'll give you that. But there's definitely the through line that's there that drags you along. It's not like nothing happened. It's just the progression of start. Sometimes when the Royal Rumble ends, you're like 30% the way to WrestleMania. Here you're about 5% to WrestleMania because you've got more pieces of the puzzle that you have to fill out as you go through.
I'm not saying the finishes necessarily didn't make sense. They were just finishes that could have happened on free TV. They are free TV finishes. They are not pay-per-view quality finishes. They're not movie quality.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I understand the place you're coming from. I humbly don't agree. But also, to say that the Royal Rumble 94 was inconsequential is a bit much.
I said what I said.
I know you did. I want to brag about production for just a little bit.
All right.
As a person who has an eye for things from behind the scenes, I really love as I die.
Cigarettes?
As I die. No, I'm not aww, ripping heaters before the podcast. What I loved is I love the promo packages leading into the tag title match and the world championship match. If the Royal Rumble is that attraction draw that brings more people to the product, which has historically been, I mean, while WrestleMania is the biggest event of the year, the Royal Rumble is the most exciting event of the year because of the unpredictable nature that is the Royal Rumble, even in 94, being able to tell the full story of Bret and Owen leading into the Royal Rumble, telling the full story of Yokozuna and The Undertaker leading into the Royal Rumble. That's really fun. I think that's a good way to explain that even in 1994, WWE's storytelling as far as vignettes and promo packages and things like that were on their way up. They knew how to tell stories pieced together from multiple weeks.
I can't knock that. That all made sense. And I would even co-sign on that. However, if I'm a first-time listener, first-time viewer, maybe I'm putting back into the fold, watching a Royal Rumble, I get Vince McMahon, and I get the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase in my ear all night.
A person who has plenty of history at the Royal Rumble. He's making his commentary debut. He's a person who's gone the distance at a Royal Rumble. He's gone 50-some-odd minutes in prior Rumbles. If there's anyone qualified to explain the Royal Rumble and the thought processes that go through a person who draws an early number, he's one of the rare people who's drawn number one and number 30 in back-to-back years.
He never drew number 30. Get out of here.
I thought he did.
He bought number 30.
I'm sorry that he acquired number 30.
Well, this is court. You better come correct.
He's the only person to experience life in the Royal Rumble from the number one spot and the number 30 slot. Is that better? Is the framing of the argument better for you, counselor?
No objections.
Okay. All right. So if there's anyone who has the note, the sense of what the Royal Rumble is like, I would rather have a Ted DiBiase there instead of superstar Billy Graham.
Oh, brother. At this time, was Billy Graham with WWF or not with WWF? And I don't mean under contract.
I don't
mean,
know. Like, where was WWE with steroids in 94?
Mostly off.
Okay, well, then he wasn't anywhere there. He's disassociating himself with that, going on to confuse himself with another Billy Graham.
Can we just talk for a second about Billy Graham? Like,
yo, are we going to dunk on Billy Graham together really quick? Yeah, like, the best like, thing he ever did was transfer all of his powers to Don Morocco, right?
Without question.
Like, he just laid his hand on The Rock's bicep and he goes, "Hey, yeah, go, brother." And then gives him Jesus Christ Superstar and tie-dye shirts. And
veins.
Done.
It always surprises me that, like, he's alive. I know that's going to sound awful,
hey,
but, like,
look, man.
Whenever there's a news article, Superstar Billy Graham says this about WWE Hall of Fame. It's like, he's alive?
That's a very good question.
Like, part of me makes me think you didn't do that many steroids if, you know, you're still alive and kicking. Because everybody else who kind of dabbled in it, their heart exploded.
I mean, not everybody. I mean, Vince is still going. The Hulkster's still going.
There's no confirmation on that.
I mean, allegedly. What? Unbeknownst to you.
Unbeknownst.
So go ahead. You're gonna sit here and you're gonna blaspheme on the good name of Ted DiBiase.
I am. I don't think he did a very good job all night. I don't think live pay per view is the time to try to get your legs under you. He sounded like a baby giraffe looks when it's trying to stand
up. Oh, calm down. That's a bit extreme.
I was not impressed with Ted DiBiase on commentary all night.
Well, how'd you feel about the reprieve that they gave him with Jim Ross and Gorilla Monsoon jumping in on commentary for the Intercontinental Championship match?
Probably the only way that R&R Shyster match could have been tolerable. Why can't I have that for 2.5 hours?
Because you have to have Vince McMahon overselling everything. And you have
One,
two, three, beat him, no. But I think that Ted DiBiase did a bang-up job as his first appearance. Like, he obviously got better. He's definitely...
Get better? Because...
on commentary.
I can't remember an instance where he really does commentary too often. Because he's going to lead the Million Dollar Corporation for the next 2 years, having a terrible feud with Undertaker. Your boy.
He's just... You know, he's just... he's given what the... Taking what the defense gives him. And he's just playing the ball as it comes to him.
Where would you rate this Ted DiBiase money suit?
Oh, it's definitely not movie quality, but it's good enough now that we're 40.
I'm surprised Ted DiBiase never had like a smoker's jacket, something a little bit more luxurious.
Yeah, I will say kind of, you know, I was defending Ted for a little bit. The stand-up with him and Vince looked very weird. Like, Ted DiBiase at a side profile view does not look very good to me. Ted DiBiase is a front-facing dude. Because when he turned to the side, you'd see, like, his beard outline and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't even recognize this man.
You look like you got the phone call that day. Hey, hey Ted.
Hey, pal.
Jerry's in trouble. Can't make the show, pal.
Puppies. Can you come by and laugh for us?
Imagine if they would have had a three-man booth with, like, Ross and Gorilla Monsoon and Vince on commentary.
I don't think it would have worked.
It would not have worked.
Especially in this era of WWE, like, they could not help themselves. They had to have a heel.
Right.
They didn't have Bobby Heenan anymore. Mm-hmm. Mr. Perfect doesn't exist.
Right.
Randy Savage has gone away. He's back in the ring. Rodney the Piper is off doing Hollywood.
Hollywood, you know.
Yeah, I'll be back. Don't worry.
Young fella.
Ah. So they kind of had to go with the next man up. And, like, he had just recently moved away from the ring at SummerSlam 93 in the white trunks.
White trunk DiBiase.
The swan song DiBiase. But yeah, I thought Ted did perfectly fine.
I was not impressed by his performance.
Let me see. I'm going to give a couple of like little shining points of things that I thought were really cool, but maybe not something that I can fully make a full case on. Yokozuna hitting Undertaker with the Fuji salt on the outside.
Always good to see Fuji salt.
Getting Fuji'd. Also, the white kid in the background going absolutely crazy when Mabel shows up. When you watch it, on the stairs to the right of hard cam, there is a kid standing on the stairs who's like waving his hands back and forth and pointing at the ramp. And he's like, he is Mabel's only fan in Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence, Rhode Island isn't a big market for men on a mission.
I don't think so. I don't feel that's true. Also, going not to like beat a dead horse and going back to the actual Royal Rumble match, but Brett's actual coming out after the bait and switch with Bastion Booger not coming out, I thought that was really cool. Like, no one comes out, everybody assumes it's Brett. You wait a couple of numbers, and here comes Brett. Like, Brett made it, he's here. And the crowd went banana. It was fun. Do you have anything else to try to dunk on this 94 Royal Rumble?
I don't. I feel like I made my case pretty well. My case is built on the lack of satisfying finishes on the night. I don't think those are pay-per-view quality finishes, and this was a pay-per-view, and especially at a time where there was only, 4 or 5 a year? So I think it hurt. You got 5 pay-per-views at this time, and this is supposed to be a big one, and I don't even have a clean finish all night except for the opener, and the opener isn't even the advertised match.
In my case resides around the legacy of the Royal Rumble, where we get something in this Royal Rumble that we get historically as a through line moving forward, abandoning the old tropes and including a new trope. And then also the ability to utilize the Royal Rumble as a bigger toe line to get to WrestleMania, where you can set up more questions in the Royal Rumble that can get answered at WrestleMania than you could have probably before. But of course, it's always up to you all. So let us know at VC on North South on Twitter whether you agree with Marcus and that the Royal Rumble 94 wasn't all that good, or that you agree with me and you think Royal Rumble 94 is a good pay-per-view. Of course, you can always let us know on the North South Connection Facebook page as well. And wherever you get your podcast, be sure to rate and review. Let us know and let them know that you enjoyed Viewer's Choice. Marcus, do you have anything to plug?
I just want to mention our founding network over at the soon-to-be-named network. Big shout out to Joe Sposto and the man Adam Van and all the other cast of characters over the Soon to Be Named Network. I want to thank them for their support and for hosting our other podcast, Final Wrestling Place. Of course, you mentioned check out the Facebook page that has all the North South Connection happenings on there and all the great podcasts that North South has to offer.
Ruthlessly Wrestling Aggressive.
Warzone, Ruthlessly Aggressive and Wrestling Warzone, and there's
Extreme,
you know,
Three-Way Dance.
Yes, and on and on and on. Year That Was is absolutely one of my favorites, and you know, so much more is happening on the Soon to Be Named Network. Excuse me, not Soon to Be Named Network, but North South Connection.
Right. I mean, and it's not just a wrestling network. I mean, there's sports talk, there's general friendship talk, there's talk about whatever it is, comic book talk. It is much more than just your wrestling podcast network. For your money's worth, free of charge, it's the place to be, man. So be sure to check out this podcast, many others. This is the first of many. We'll settle in and we'll get our footing for sure. And we'll be back at you in just about a week's time. February 1st, no fooling. We'll be here for the Viewer's Choice of Royal Rumble 2021, live from the Thunderdome at Tropicana Field. Only thing we have left to say is to tell the people bye. Marcus, tell the people goodbye.
Later.